Good day, everyone. Welcome to Lubrication Experts. And today we are talking grease again. And this time we're talking a new grease specification. So something super important for the industry and hopefully something that we can all get on board with. Sometimes there's a bit of a black box as to why these specifications are developed and exactly what they're for. So we're hoping to kind of like expand the sort of the knowledge gap, if you like, or close the knowledge gap on this particular spec. So the HPM grease specification. And there's no one better to talk to about this than Gary Dudley. So Gary actually was an old colleague of mine at ExxonMobil, has since left and is working as an independent consultant. He's actually part of like the lubrication expert group that we've put together. So I'm trying to put together like a sort of a full service technical offer, from formulation through to marketing, sales, as well as aftermarket support. And you know, he's kind of come on board as both our grease and industrial lubricant formulation specialist as well. But Gary, did you want to give, you know, maybe a little bit more flavor to that background?
Yeah. So thanks for having me on your show. Feels like this is a weekly show. I always look forward to seeing your YouTube videos come out each week from that standpoint. So yeah, a little bit. So like I said, you know, spent my entire career at ExxonMobil. Some people probably know, recently retired. And, you know, one of those things I said, enjoyed always working in lubricants. You know, I worked from, I always tell people, like, most remember me from greases is what, you know, second half of my career really at ExxonMobil was all about. But you know, I spent a lot of time working on synthetic base stocks, you know, PAO, esters, did some, and then moved into aviation lubricants for a bit. And then, you know, did a bit of a stint in industrial lubricants, working on various things there and then sort of into greases. But, you know, I sort of started my career in greases. I told people, I was doing the training at NLGI, as most people know, on synthetic base stocks. And then later my career moved to the other side and worked on the formulation side. So various roles from R&D all the way. And eventually when I retired, you know, I was the technology manager for ExxonMobil at that standpoint. So been involved for, you know, 27 years now in this space.
Yeah, awesome. I always like these kind of intros because you get to sort of see there's so many different career paths within our industry. You know, people often come into the industry, let's say by accident, and then they find themselves kind of pinging around. And so, you know, part of what I love about the industry is the breadth of experience that you sort of can gain. But anyway, let's talk HPM grease specifications. And I think, you know, there might be a little bit of knowledge within our industry as to what it is. So let's say, for example, at Lube Expo and STLE, there's been a few people advertising HPM greases and things like that. So let's maybe take it one step further. If I'm an end user and I see that someone is selling an HPM grease, what does that mean to me?
I think, you know, the first part I would start off with, you know, what is HPM, right? It's just an acronym for high performance multi-use grease. And so start with that. And so it's probably the most common grease out in the industry. So I think a lot of folks see it all the time and just don't recognize it. And so it sort of evolved from there. So, you know, a number of discussions started, you know, maybe about a decade or so ago with NLGI, really looking at, you know, trying to get more involved in the industry and so help guiding end users. If you look in this space for greases, there's not many specifications, right? So it's sort of new. And I think, like your question said, is that what's it mean? I haven't seen this. It just came out, you know, sort of nowhere. It's sort of, in some ways, you know, it's an evolution of a specification that NLGI manages now, the GCLB specification. You know, that's really more for wheel bearings and chassis on automotive vehicles. But, you know, one of the things we saw is people were taking that spec and starting to apply it to multi-use or multi-purpose type greases, which is probably really not the right way to apply that specification. It really was meant for something else. And so what NLGI ideas sort of got together and said, hey, you know, let's try to put a specification out there that sort of defined the key criteria and performance requirements for a multi-use grease. You know, something that an end user can look at and say, you know, I see the specification, you know, I should feel a bit more comfortable that, you know, it can be used in a wide range of applications because, you know, a lot of businesses, right, or companies, you know, the ultimate goal is I want one grease for everything, right? You know, they'll try to get there. And so sometimes you're just picking and choosing what works. And you really don't have a lot of guidance to get you there. So that was sort of, in a way, you know, the premise behind this. The other part was, you know, I think brings with this is a lot of things, you know, like on the automotive side, right? You've heard of GF6, you know, GF5, PC11, you know, part NLGI also brought with this too, that sort of make the end users hopefully feel better, more comfortable, you know, selecting an HPM grease is that, you know, they, you know, they're independent, right? Organization that, you know, dedicated to grease industry. So that means everything shall be third-party reviewed and assessed. From that standpoint, they have an external agency, Center for Quality Assurance, is doing the auditing and qualification step. So independent, you know, group monitoring and managing everything. So it avoids all that, you know, did they pass it, not pass it type of thing. And, you know, and then they build into, you know, an audit process. So the other part with this, I think, gives end user, I think, a sense of confidence, you know, I'm getting a good grease. That's really what it gets down to, right? Am I getting a good grease to use my equipment? And so that's sort of, you know, behind what it means that, you know, if you look at it, you know, you're getting a quality grease. And I think another nice thing is like, particularly for end users, like a lot of times you see, you know, a supplier come in and say, hey, here's all my specification performance criteria, right? You get the second supplier to bring in something completely different. And you're like, well, how do I compare them? And so I think that, you know, that brings a good chance for the end users like, hey, okay, now I can start comparing things on equal grounds and make my decision based on what extra stuff do they bring to the table.
Yeah. So I was going to ask a little bit about that in terms of the development of the specification. So, you know, it always feels like when we have a new spec come to the industry, it's basically setting a floor of performance, right? And so as long as you exceed that, then, you know, you meet the specification, but there's still quite a lot of room for different companies to differentiate performance within that spec.
Yeah.
Is that the same for HPM? Like, are you envisioning that the greases will be relatively consistent in performance, to use a grease pun, or do you think of it more as like a minimum criteria, and then, you know, people might, you know, overshoot that if they're going for a very, very high performance grease?
Yeah, and I think that was something we sort of kept in mind. We sort of set our goal as when we, you know, it was a team put together, obviously, the industry to set these specs. And one of the things we always sort of referenced to ourselves was, you know, we wanted it to, the specs to be challenging, but doable, right? And so we wanted to be able, like you said, it's a, you know, may look at it as a set of floor spec. Okay, these are the bare minimums, but, you know, everyone should be able to meet those. And then you leave that room for differentiation from that standpoint. And even within the differentiation, you know, NLGA also adds the option of adding what they call tags. So you can get the HPM certification, but you can also add an additional claim for, say, low temperature, water resistance, corrosion resistance, that type of stuff, which is already taking the base HPM requirements and just adding an additional layer of, you know, difficulty to it. Say, hey, you know, okay, now you need to step out. If you want corrosion resistance, if you want water resistance, you need to do a little bit extra, a little bit more there. So definitely opens the door for, you know, people to, you know, differentiate each other. I think the big part is too, is like, you now have a common set of tests and methods that really lets the end user do an apples to apples comparison. I know you were, your video the other day talking about, you know, got to be careful you're not doing apples to oranges comparisons, right? You really want to do apples to apples. And so I think HPM sets that by defining the test you should be looking at. And then the results let you differentiate performance for your application.
Yeah. That idea of the tags is really interesting because we've not really seen that in a specification to date, right? Like you said, with the engine oils, you know, GF6A, GF6B, you know, CK4 or whatever, they've always been a very standardized spec across the entire industry. And, you know, if you wanted to beat some of the performance levels by 2X, 3X, there was no real way within the spec to be able to claim credit for that. Now, obviously, there's still going to be differentiation, but the ability to have a tag for, like you said, you know, water washout or something like that is that's actually kind of unique. I've not really seen that applied anywhere else. Yeah, interesting. Yeah. So you mentioned that there are previous specifications relating more to automotive and that people were kind of taking that spec and kind of using it and extending its use for multi-purpose greases. So what are the major changes that we had to make from that previous spec to the current one?
Yeah, so we did, like you say, I do encourage everyone to, you know, take a look at the NLGI website. There's a nice comparison on there. And so what you'll see is some of the tests methods will be the same, but we'll change the severity of the test. So I'll take one example, like four ball weld. You know, for GCLB claim, you're looking at 200, right? When you move to HPM, now it's 250. So same test method, but the severity is different from that standpoint. So that's one example of something we did. The other one is we added some new tests in, you know, something like shell roll stability. You know, very common, well-known in the grease industry, not part of GCLB specification requirement, as well as, you know, we had an oxidation test. That's not part of GCLB is there. So we sort of also looked across the industry saying, what are the standard ones, you know, folks are always looking at and using and making sure, you know, try to incorporate those into the specification. So not only there's a sense of, you know, familiarity, there's a sense of, you know, these are tests people are already doing and running right now. We just sort of need to define, you know, what's the bare minimum level of performance you need to set as a specification. So,
yeah.
And then, so that's sort of how we looked at it. It's like, we didn't want to, you know, just roll over GCLB and say, you know, new and improved version. We really wanted something that stood out, you know, familiar, but we wanted it to be different and really tailored to being able to use it in multiple different applications. So when you look at, you know, HPM spec into all the tests, you know, you're going to see it cover a wide range of different types of things, from, you know, oxidation, you know, a little bit around low temperature, seals, stability, that type of stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Last thing I want to just want to add is make sure everyone understands, you know, GCLB is not going away. It's still staying. This is just, you know, another set of specifications for the industry to use for the greases.
Okay. So then if I'm an end user, where would I expect to use these greases? Because we've already said they're multi-purpose. Now, unfortunately, multi-purpose means completely different things to everyone. And if I'm in, you know, industrial versus I'm in automotive versus I'm in agriculture, you know, the expectations for a multi-purpose grease can change quite a bit. So what kind of applications are we expecting? And obviously people are going to take this specification and use it however they want. But when NLGI had some maybe applications in mind for this spec, what kind of things were we thinking about?
Yeah, so we did think a bit about, you know, one, we sort of started at the sector, you know, things like, okay, we wanted to make sure it could be used in automotive, you know, steel, construction, mining, you know, general manufacturing, you know, paper, that type of stuff. So we sort of stepped back and said, okay, look at it from a separate approach. Because if you sit back now, just like you said, it's like multi-purpose greases, you know, they end up everywhere. And so that was, from that standpoint, we wanted to make sure we kept that part in mind as we set this, you know, the new specifications from there. You know, but getting down to specifics, you know things like conveyor bearings, you know, pillow block fan bearings, you know, even at that level, specific type of things, you know, plane bearing, rollers, hinges, bushings, you know, things like that is, you know, that's where we see this type of grease end up showing up. And the reason, like I said, there's no good answers. You know, where you can see it, I hate to say it, you know, everywhere. But we also made sure the spec wasn't going to narrow you into things like it had to be a certain thickener type, right? You can meet the specification with different types of thickeners, right? And, you know, looking at the list, and you know, I haven't done a deep dive, but I know there's a calcium sulfonate on there. There are definitely lithium greases on there. You know, my experience, you know, I could easily see a polyurea grease being on there. Maybe already one on there. I just haven't, you know, I've found it. So from a thickener type, it's open to different types of thickeners, which, you know, opens up different applications. Same thing around the base oil, right? It's, you know, you don't have to use PAO to make this specification. You can use mineral oils, group ones, group two, you know, three, four, and five. It could be any type of, you know, base oil being used. And the same thing around the additives. You know, it can be a various different types of additives can be used to get you there. So we wanted to keep that flexibility for the industry. So they wouldn't, you know, lock people out, but at the same time, give everyone a chance to make, you know, a good grease.
Yeah. So maybe to flip the question around, you know, because you've described what I would kind of imagine in a lot of industries is 99% of your greased applications. So what are kind of like the niche use cases or fringe use cases where you would see this specification not applying?
I think right now where we see, I'll put it this way, the challenge we see for the future is, and it's, I'll put a caveat is, and I'll just look working on it, is when you get into long life and high temperature greases, you know, it may be, you know, a bit difficult to say, you know, how do you take this spec and apply it to those type of applications? And it's something right now, you know, we call it phase two of the project. You know, they're working on, it's like, how do we come up with a long life specification and a high temp application specification? Or are they both the same? You know, I would look at it, I'd say they maybe be separate because you can have long life and you don't need high temp. But you know, it goes either way. And so, and that's one of the challenges we know early on we saw going into this. We really wanted to try to build that into the spec, but the challenge there is, you know, you start getting into dynamic bearing tests, right? Right. You know, high speed bearing, low speed bearing tests, you know, where you're actually putting it in, say, an electric motor or something that tests the grease and see what the life is. And so there's a lot of challenges around, you know, what's the right test to pick, you know, what type of bearing type to even pick. So what we decided to do was table it and said, you know, let's come back to that. Let's get this core specification out there right now to sort of help folks. And the other part, you can sort of build, gets your, you know, comment, like, you know, and a customer or an end user may be like, you know, I got an extreme application I'm looking at, the HPM doesn't cover it. Well, you could still, what we've sort of been, you know, educating a lot of folks and saying, you know, you can take HPM and say as an end user, or, you know, a manufacturer and say, hey, you still need to meet HPM. And that's part of your specification internally, but then you can add your own requirements onto it. So it's sort of a good way to say, pre-screen everyone. If you, you know, if you're looking at multipliers, say, hey, we need everybody to meet HPM. That puts everybody on equal footing. And oh, by the way, you know, we're going to add two or three extra tests on our own. And so we think that's another way, you know, complements what OEMs may be doing with their own specifications, that, you know, they're trying to figure out what to incorporate into their own new spec. You know, they can sort of pick the HPM and say, okay, we're going to go with HPM, and then we're just going to add, you know, another two or three tests to this. Or, you know, they take HPM and they may just say, hey, you know what, your four ball weld is, you know, 250, you know, we're going to say, you know, we want 800. They may make a change, but I think that's part where I think it's going to really help a lot of these companies is, you know, it's a good reference document to help them build out what they want to do. I think a lot of OEMs these days, right, you know, they don't have lubes experts, right, on staff, right, who understand oils and greases and that type of stuff. So I think, you know, this is something they can look at from the industry that's, you know, specialized in greases to help them, you know, design their own specifications to make them better. Save them a lot of trouble, make down the road, and go make things faster and easier.
Yeah. So a couple of things to all those OEMs who do need a lube expert. I mean, give us a call. So I totally agree that it's nice to have kind of a reference document so that you can sort of base your own internal specifications on, right? But it's very, very useful. Maybe a question, you mentioned a list. Right, that you can go to the list and find out what greases are on the list. And so that obviously implies that with the HPM spec, manufacturers or let's say grease marketers need to apply and there's some kind of certification process, right? And you mentioned that audit is part of that process, right? Ensuring that, and this is from a consumer protection standpoint, making sure let's say, for example, if there's a random testing program that that the manufacturers and the marketers are manufacturing kind of like to the performance criteria that they specified, which is great from an end user perspective, that sort of like assurance that it gives you. Now, maybe a question that some of the marketers might be interested in is that, let's say, for example, in engine oils, you know, you and I would know that, let's say, a Lubrizol or an Oronite with their additive package will say, you know, this ad pack plus X base oil will give you, let's say, API CK4, right? And a lot of manufacturers will then list, you know, kind of get grandfathered into CK4 as a result. Now, it sounds like HPM is not really going to work that way. And, you know, if you are using either a white label grease or a an additive package or a kind of like a premix that comes from one of the majors, that you are then going to have to independently apply for HPM yourself to become part of that certification program. Is that, am I correct in kind of describing the mechanics there?
Yeah, so each one will be, like you said, each company will have to apply, you know, get their certification from that standpoint. There is a bit of where, you know, say the manufacturer of the grease is applied and they got it under their own brand or on the site, right? You can go to NLGI and see it. But there's also a process where, say, if someone else is saying, buying that grease from them and rebranding it as another grease, you know, they don't have to go through the full process of requalifying. They can use called the parent application as part of the process. So you don't have to do a full, you know, requalification if you're just taking an existing product and rebranding it. So it gets to a little bit, like you said, you know, you can sort of get a little bit there. The other part of what you're seeing out in the industry now, and I saw a bit of myself as over time, was what we're actually seeing is some of the additive companies come out with packages or individual components saying, hey, you know, you mix these components we're selling together in, say, a group one mineral oil lithium complex, you know, you can meet HPM, or you can meet HPM plus the WR for water resistance. So you're seeing a little bit of that, like you said, moving towards what sort of the automotive industry there is doing, you know, not quite that far there yet. The biggest challenge, obviously, in all this, as people know what grease is, you know, it's the manufacturing, right? You know, two different companies could be using exactly the same additive technology and base oil, but if the processes are different, you know, you easily make a grease with different properties and performance. So, but you're seeing that move where, you know, the additive companies are coming out and say, hey, you know, someone wants, you know, they come to a, you know, a customer comes to them and says, hey, you know, I want to go after an HPM grease with corrosion resistance, what do you got? Mm-hmm. You've really seen the additive companies now, and there's a number out there. Great. Here's what you need to do this. I got the components. Here's what you need to mix. Here's the treat rate, that type of stuff. So it's getting there. But like I said, the additive companies, I think they've definitely jumped on it. You know, they were part of the whole spec setting too, so they were aware of what was coming from that standpoint. And, you know, I think a lot of them were, you know, once it got published, they were ready. They're like, hey, we have the technology. This is what you need to do to meet the spec. So it sort of went nicely hand in hand that way too. So.
Yeah, awesome. So maybe as we start to wrap up here, HPM greases. Now, I've seen them kind of advertised in some of our trade shows and things like that. But is the program like fully up and running and, you know, HPM greases are available in the market? Is there some kind of, you know, stage rollout plan? What's the plan?
Yeah, so it's fully up and launched. Officially launched in 2021. Obviously, as folks remember, that was sort of right in the middle of COVID. So there were, like I said, we all recognized it. There were some challenges, you know, getting things up and going. It was a bit harder to, you know, get word out and talk about it. But so it was launched January of 2021. First grease went and looked, was approved in August. 2021, so too long after it first launched. I checked this morning. I counted 24 greases are now on the list. A range of companies from that standpoint. The one thing I thought was interesting, I hadn't noticed it before, but there were two greases on the list. I don't know who they are. One was Mack Tools. The other was DeWalt. So in North America, two well-known brands for tools. So it sort of got to what we were hoping at the very beginning, that OEMs would start recognizing the value of the specification and they could use it for their products. So I thought it was exciting to see Mack Tools and DeWalt listed brands on two of the greases that got HPM approval. So it sort of gets back to, you know, I think the industry is starting to see it. I think it's starting to pick up steam now. I think things like these, you know, they take time. It's not easy, you know, change a spec, get a spec launched. So if you think through it, right, you launched it in 2021, you know, expect a year or two of, you know, communication, development time, if you want to make a new grease, you know, that takes time. And then as it goes down, you know, the end users and the equipment builders, you know, think about the time it takes for them to change a spec or update documents. So, you know, this is something we realize, you know, it's going to be a long-term, you know, driven specification. We expect it will grow over time. I mean, GCLB, I think well over 200 listed greases on that specification. So that's what we're looking at. You know, we think it's going to grow over time. It's just going to be, you know, as more and more people recognize it, you know, if they, you know, an OEM creates a new product, piece of equipment, you know, that's when I think you're going to see them apply HPM. I don't think you'll see the retroactive, like, hey, we got a piece of equipment that's been out there for 10 years. We're just going to jump over to HPM. Probably a bit more unlikely. I think what you'll see is as new things come out, that's when you'll start seeing HPM work its way more and more into the industry.
Yeah.
And then on the NFGI side, you know, I talked about, you know, the log life and high temp tags, you know, continue to work that area. I think NLGI is committed, you know, get through those two, which will be challenging. You know, may take another 2 to 3 years before we see that. And we've already started talking a bit about, you know, wouldn't it be great if NLGI can come out with a, you know, specification or method around energy efficiency for greases? That's so I think what we're looking at is like just the first phase of this. And I think the plan NLGI sort of mapped out, you know, this is something we want to keep growing and doing over the years, adding more and more, you know, whether it's a tag or a specification to really sort of help the industry.
Yeah.
Feel confident and have something to look at, right? You know, too many times it's like we started off at the beginning, it's like, you know, you get a couple of suppliers come in, they all have their own test methods, they all have their own preference for limits. I think having a common ground to start with for the industry, I think it's going to really help a lot.
Well, I very much look forward to the growing family of HPM specs. Now, I mean, specs are always one of those things which are, they're kind of like the boring part of our industry, right? Of setting specifications, but the downstream impacts of setting those specs are obviously really important for end users. So, Gary, really appreciate you coming in and helping to explain a bit of the history and the context behind the grease spec, and you know what end users can expect out of that. And I think there's some really good tips, especially around setting a baseline for you know internal specs as well. So, really appreciate your time, and we'll talk soon.
All right, thanks a lot.